Blog Talk Radio.
Who can say for certain? Maybe you're still here. I feel you all around me, your memory so clear. Deep in the stillness, I can hear you speak. You're still an inspiration. Can it be that you are mine forever? And you are watching over me from up above. Fly me up to where you are beyond the distant star. I wish upon tonight to see you smile. If only for faith believing, all power can't be seen. As my heart holds you, just one beat away, I cherish all you gave me every day.
Everybody, and welcome to the Red Fox Blogger, and I'm your host, Cal Fritzy, and tonight we are going to discuss something different than what I usually do, and that is, of course, my being a counter-jihadist. We're going to discuss what happened in Canada. Canada is in mourning, and this week we had a National Day of Mourning, and that we lost three Royal Canadian Mounted Police officers in trying to subdue a maniac in Moncton, New Brunswick, who is running around the streets with weapons. Now, this is not a reflection on gun control. This was just weapons that got in the hands of the wrong person. We are honoring the memories of Constables Dave Ross, Fabrice Juvedon, and Douglas Larch. And the other two RCMP officers that were injured. This is going to be a very tough show for me as a Canadian. It is a national tragedy. I'm not going to be speaking a whole lot. I'm going to be playing a lot of clips, though. But I want to share this with you right now.
Privacy. Drive in total confidence with a...
If I can get rid of the pop-ups, that would be just absolutely bloody fantastic. And thank you very much for that. But here we go.
He was a father. His three girls, Mia, Lauren, and Alexa, were his life, his love, his priorities. He put them and their needs before his own and worked very hard to ensure that he took every moment and every chance to help them enjoy and succeed in life.
Now, Rachel, Austin, your forthcoming child, your family, and all of Canada will remember you as you deserve to be remembered, a true hero, an honest and happy man who devoted his life to his family, his passions, his spirituality, and inevitably his career.
And a third service was held for Fabrice Givaudan. His spiritual advisor spoke and gave a very touching...
I'm going to pause it there. That was the brother speaking of one of the fallen, and that was James Larch. And I'm not going to inundate you with too many sound bites, but that was a brother talking about his little brother. And they were growing up. And they had their, as usual, as siblings do, they had their Donnybrooks. And but he was saying that, you know, that guy was my brother and my best friend. In that speech, he carried forth to say that I was nervous about getting married, and I was nervous about becoming a father. And his younger brother assured him that you will never experience anything like fatherhood. It is fantastic. It is so heartbreaking to me that this happened again in Canada, you know. We had an incident in Mayerthorpe, Alberta. A few years back. This is where four RCMP officers were slain. It was a terrible, terrible, devastating tragedy. Canada is a very unique country in that we feel the pain. We feel what happens to these officers. it's hard on us because we are a tiny country. Essentially, we have a geographical reach, of course. We're the second largest geographical reach on the planet. But we are a tiny population. And we really do honor the fallen and what happened on Wednesday touched the entire country. What happened in Moncton, New Brunswick was just absolutely a shock to us. Men going out to defend what was going on. To ensure the safety of the community. Constable David Ross, Constable Fabrice Georges Govedian, and Constable Douglas James Larch. One was off duty. He didn't have to go out there. It's summertime, and he's in his backyard enjoying his family time. But he heard in his community that there was a maniac on the loose. He left the backyard. He left the barbecue lid open. He left the garage door open. And he said, "Honey, I'll be back later." He had three children, three daughters, young daughters. One constable killed leaves behind a widow of one child. She is expecting their second baby in September. Another constable leaves behind two children. They go out there each and every day to protect us. And they don't even take a day off. They don't even take a day off. It is in their minds. Being an officer is a calling. It's not a job. It's a calling. And when these constables realized that there was something afoot, they had to don their uniforms and go out there again. And please scroll up and look at the slides I put in there. It is devastating. One was a dog handler. And you're going to see slides of Danny. And Danny is the German Shepherd. I watched that funeral. It was 3.5 hours long, but it was my obligation as a Canadian and a patriot to do so. And you could hear Danny crying. He was looking for his master while on duty, but his daddy while off duty. This is definitely another devastating day of mourning, and I got something here for you. and I'm going to play it. This is from St. Paul. This is the RCMP. Like I aforementioned, Anthony Gordon, Leo Johnston, Brock Morrow, and Peter Scheiben were found on a property near Mayor Fort, Alberta, on March 3rd, 2005. They were doing the exact same thing. There was a maniac on the loose, and they went to investigate, and they were gunned down. This clip is courtesy of CBC.
Very close to home here in Alberta, where we had our own tragedy back in 2005 in Mayerthorpe. Four RCMP officers were killed at that time. Albert Schaum was the mayor of Mayerthorpe at the time. He joins me on the phone now. Good morning, Albert.
Good morning.
What was running through your mind when you heard the news of this?
Well, I think the first thing is that we're shocked that another community has to go through this. I mean, we're deeply saddened, and certainly our hearts go out to all the residents of Moncton.
This must really bring up the bad times that you went through and all the people of Mayerthorpe.
Well, I think it does, and I think maybe Moncton's even scarier because the incident hasn't been resolved yet. And I mean, we certainly hope and pray that it's resolved soon and in a peaceful way.
Is there anything you learned along the way that helped you get through it and help the community cope?
I think it's just patience and, you know, and working at letting the RCMP and letting the authorities and everybody doing their job. And I think one of the things, one of the personal things that I learned out of everything is the RCMP tend to deal with the same kind of people every day, whereas the vast majority of people on this earth are really, really good people. They don't always see us, you know, so it's, you know, extend our hearts out to them, you know, give them a smile type of thing. They like to be noticed that they're, you know, providing peace and safety for us. And they're there to do a job, and they do it very well.
In the years following those shootings in Mayerthorpe, how did the community recover? How did things come back to some sense of normalcy?
We did certain things, and whether it's memorial parks and that kind of stuff, and it was just a lot of respect, and it was a community that pulled itself together. We had, you know, we were able to do that, and Moncton will do that also, pull themselves back together and get back to normal. It's very, very difficult for the families of the RCMP officers who were killed. That's where all the pressure is, and that's where all the stress is. And I mean, the community will reach out and support them, and the country will also reach out and support them. But the community will go on as communities do. I mean, this isn't the only tragedy that happened, you know. And whether it's SARS in Toronto and that kind of stuff, I mean, life goes on, and we get back to whatever normal will be.
Well, for sure, the attention that's focused on your community for a short time, and the intensity of it can really affect how, you know, the community reacts to it. How did that affect everything? Just the attention on Mayerthorpe, the examination of the people there, and just that sort of guilt by association, just by being part of the community after such a tragedy.
Yeah, I was really proud of our community, the way we came together and the way the community worked together and saw if somebody in the community had a need, somebody would just jump in and help them without even being asked. And we had, as you understand, I mean, mass media all of a sudden descended upon us, and we're not used to that. I mean, it's not something that any community would go through. And our community, we dug in, and somebody was there and set up tables and set up food lines and fed the media and fed people, you know, and typically just looked after, you know, whatever accommodations could be made and needed to be made. And we just reacted as a small community does, type of thing. And I was really, really proud of how we worked together. And I did it without even being asked. People just did stuff, and it was really neat.
Now, so many years later, is there still anything different about the relationship with the RCMP now? Do people have more of a feeling toward them that, you know, that they still remember what happened and they It's changed?
Yeah, I think so. I certainly hope so. I mean, I know for sure that I do. My relationship with the RCB changed, and I think a lot of people it did. It changed also, and, you know, and then much, much more respect.
Well, Mr. Sean, we thank you very much for speaking with us this morning. I'm sure it's a difficult time when you see what's going on in Moncton.
It really is. My heart, as I say, my heart goes out to Moncton and all the people and to the mayor. He's got a difficult job.
Thanks very much for speaking with us.
Okay, thank you. Have a good morning. Have a good day.
Thank you. That was Albert Schaum. He's the mayor. He was the mayor of Manorthorpe in 2005 when four RCMP officers were shot and killed there.
See, this is why I'm doing this particular program. When we lost those four officers in Manorthorpe, Alberta, it was devastating. Canada was rocked, literally, to her knees. And then last week, last Wednesday, we lost three others. They were just doing their jobs. These are men, and they were responding to a crisis that was going on. And these three noble officers were just gunned down by a maniac. All three were fathers and husbands and sons. And one was an expectant father. They were so blessed. They led good lives. They had happy families. They were raising good children. And this is their reward. And this is what makes me think that I'm going to lose my faith in God some days, people. You know? It's sorrowful. You go to high school and you graduate and you join a police academy, not because you see it as a job. It's not a job. It's a calling. And you sign up and you go through the boot camp. And you're on the streets defending your community. And you're shot in the head. And I have to question, what is the big plan? Why does God play with us? And this is where I start to lose my faith. Three men on top of four other men in the RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Just gone. They're gone. All of them were husbands. They had children. Like, what is this? And why do we deal with maniacs? Why do we allow this to happen? I don't understand. I really don't. And welcome to the Red Fox Blogger. I'm your host, Kel Fritzy, the crybaby one. But you know what? You know, I think I have a right to be distressed about this, and I think you should as well. Peers. in a court. This is just absolutely, I can't believe this. I can't even deal with this. This is devastating to me. I have another question.
With a payment solution from PayPal.
And I got myself a pop-up. Isn't that lovely? I'm sorry, folks. I really am overwhelmed, though.
This is the outcome that we wanted. We wanted to have the arrest done as quick as possible without any further injury or death to anyone. And that's what occurred, and we're extremely pleased, and I'm extremely proud of all the officers and the public that assisted us in getting this resolution.
Thankfully today, thankfully this morning, we can all go back home, we can all go to our respective homes and move about in this city freely and with a sense of confidence that was there before. And again, I thank you. Please keep your thoughts and your prayers with us, with our families, as we grieve and heal together. I can now confirm the identities of our three fallen members. First of all, Constable Fabrice Georges Gévaudan, 45 years of age, who was born in Boulogne-Billancourt, France. Constable Dave Joseph Ross, 32 years of age, from Victoriaville, Quebec. Thirdly, Constable Doug James Larch, 40 years of age, from St. John, New Brunswick. And I can't dig deep enough to explain the sadness that we all feel. We need to start this healing process together.
And thank you, the Canadian Press, for that. It was an unbelievable ceremony. The memorial was phenomenal in recognizing these three gentlemen, these RCMP officers. It was the same outpouring that happened in Alberta in 2005 when four RCMP officers were also taken down. I watched on TV the 3.5-hour memorial. But really, you know, it really hit me that this, you know, it's just it's like a blink in time that this goes on. You know, you get up, you take your shower, you brush your teeth, and you have your breakfast, and you take your lunch, and you walk out the door and see you later tonight, honey. And sometimes it does not quite work out that way. I know that laypersons are fallen as well. We know about the construction worker and, the postal worker or the businessman in his car being T-boned. And I'm not diminishing anybody that way. All I'm saying, though, is that when you are called to service, it is your livelihood, like it's your life, not livelihood, but it's your life. This is your life. This is the rest of your life. And to be taken out like that by a maniac. A man suspected of fatally shooting three New Brunswick Mounties, and this asshole wounded two others. He appeared in a Moncton court. I'm not going to name him. He's not worth it. I'm not going to name him. You can Google it on your own. I'm not going to name him. No way. But this asshole, he was arrested shortly after midnight on the Thursday. I'm looking at the photograph of these three RCMP. It's really, really heartbreaking. I think I have another clip here that I want to play, but I better put my speaker on hold. Yeah, because I'm getting a pop-up, as usual. I really hope that this clip does not name who this person is. But here we go anyway.
I could hear them. I could hear them screaming, come out, come out, come out, right? You're there. Come out, come out. And all the commotion is very upsetting to know that he was so close to my home, right? Well, I feel very relieved. I have not slept in about 48 hours, so I'm very hyper, right? And that relief that you get when, you know, say, oh my, it's all over, right? So I said to myself, I said, go for a walk around the block, see if you can get rid of some of this energy so you can go home and go to sleep.
What has the last day or so been like for you and maybe your family as well?
Very terrifying. I mean, we went out on our deck today, and my husband and I both looked at one another and said, we have lived here 29 years, and we have never heard this place so quiet and somber.
And that was just a testimonial from a woman in that neighborhood where he was apprehended. I'm glad that his name was not brought up. Like I say, you can Google it for yourself, but I will not mention his name. I have it right in front of me, but I'm not going to mention it on my radio program. You can Google the RCMP Moncton killings, and you can find it for yourself. This I'm not going to do, though, on the Red Fox blogger, because we are honoring the memories of the RCMP officers that were slaughtered in the streets of Moncton last Wednesday. And also, please, in the chat room, please scroll up and take a look at the slides. And it was hard on me putting this show together, like really hard, like wow hard. You guys know that I'm rather want to tears anyway, because nothing seems to ever give me a break. But this one was especially hard to put together. But those slides, holy smokes, that was tough. It was a hard week in Canada. It was hard on me. Being a counter-jihadist, self-proclaimed, there's so much mess that I have to clear off my desk some days. But I think that putting the slides up there, in particular Danny. And that being the police dog, the RCMP canine. And that sounds so cold and formal. But Danny was just a German shepherd who loved his daddy. Downloading those and putting them in the show notes, it really hit home that this dog is without his daddy. Danny, at the funeral, was pining. And there's one slide where the RCMP officer, one of the pallbearers, is carrying his Stetson, because, you know, RCMP officers, they wear Stetsons. And Danny was jumping up because he could smell Daddy. That was heartbreaking. We lose men and women every single day via military or frontline, via firefighters, police officers, paramedics, hospital workers. We lose men and women every single day. This is gut-wrenching, though. Three fold out just like that. Just like that, they were taken out. I have a caller. I'm going to bring him on. And this is 0240. Hi.
This ain't a him. Kel, it's Annie.
Annie. Oh, Annie, baby. I am so happy to hear your voice. How are you, honey?
All right. My heart is breaking for you. And I got to say, from someone who would every single day go to the locker, strap on that gun belt, and go out on patrol, I know the heartbreak that you're feeling, but moreover, the heartbreak the fellow Mounties are feeling for this person. I've gone to too many of those funerals of a fellow officer down. First one was Eddie Byrne in 1987, and they never get easy, not one. And I swear that was the first real nosebleed I had because I was so upset. Eddie Byrne and I went to the police academy together, and we studied together. We were in sister companies. He ended up going to Queens. I went to Brooklyn. But I'm telling you, when you go to one of these things, it is something you have to witness in person to completely understand. And when a community comes around, you know, down to officers, it is something that it gives you hope at times, but also it brings home the pain. So I missed the very first part of the show. I don't know if you knew these gentlemen personally.
I did not, but it's like a pick in your heart, and we all have big hearts. And we all have resilient hearts, but sometimes something pierces it, and it just drives it home. And this is a tough show to do, Annie.
They're not easy. When you center it on something like this, it is not easy at all. People think about cops or Mounties, and they think, well, that's the man out there. They're out there just to give me a ticket and hassle me because I'm speeding.
Yeah.
They're there just to
exactly.
just to make money for the government. That's not what these people are. These are men and women who, for whatever reason, decided to serve their community.
Mm-hmm.
And law enforcement officers are not the highest paid people in the land. Well, excuse me, unless you're somewhere in California, but or not. I mean, I worked in the city, in New York City. That's, everyone says city, and everyone understands it's New York City. But if you went out to the two outlying counties, they were earning $20,000, $40,000 to $60,000 a year more than we did. And yet, New York City, being the largest police force, earned less, with more people to take care of. And our motto is protect and serve, and that's what these men and women do. They don't go out there to bust your chops because you ran a red light or you parked in front of a hydrant. They're out there to make sure that you're safe. And there are times where we place ourselves in danger without even thinking about it, without the first thought in your head. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I ran towards something, and then by the time I got home back to my husband and I'm sitting there and I'm just letting everything wash over me, I'm going, what the hell was I thinking? But you're there, you do their job, you react, and you think about it later. And that's what these men did. And unfortunately, they paid the ultimate price. I'm lucky. I was able to go home at the end of the day. There were a lot of times I came pretty close to not coming home. But I got home at the end of the day, and I'm now sitting here in retirement, nice and comfortable. These men left behind families. They left behind children. They left behind loved ones. They didn't get to go home. And now these families are looking to see where they pick up the pieces after that. So if you see a law enforcement person out there, walk up to them, thank them, shake their hand, and say, thank you for being here for my protection. Instead of when they pull you over for blowing the red light, say, officer, I am so sorry. I really did not mean to blow the light. You know, officer, thank you for being there, because someone else could have ran that light and we could have crashed, and that could have been a very fatal day. Thank you for helping me go home safe one more day.
Oh, I know. And that's the point I was trying to drive across, is that you don't sign up for a paycheck. People don't sign up for this line of business because it's a paycheck. First of all, the pay is really, you know, quite lousy. And we don't pay them nearly enough for the service that they perform in protecting me and Annie and all of you folks. And it's just that when they're out there and they're in the line of duty and they're coming home in body bags, it really hits us. It hits Annie and myself, of course. It's a calling. And I don't think we're doing nearly enough, Annie.
No, when we have our government here in the United States fighting the benefits for people that responded to 9/11, people are dying from the cancers because of the chemicals and things they used in the buildings when they built the Twin Towers, and the government is denying them, you know, health care, and yet they push Obamacare. You know,
sending them to ghost doctors.
We ignore our veterans. There are 79 facilities now of veteran hospitals that have fudged the numbers on veterans. The numbers are coming out of what we do to our own veterans, much less what we do to our law enforcement or any of our first responders. And Kelly, this really gets me really pissed off, because there's something out there. Ever since Obamacare passed, you've got a lot of volunteer fire departments and volunteer ambulances. And you know what our government's doing? Even though they're unpaid and they're 100% volunteer, they're saying they're the employee of that establishment or government. Therefore, they fall under Obamacare, and therefore that government, whether it's a town of 500 people, has to pay for the Obamacare. And these volunteers saying, we don't want it. We've got ourselves taken care of on our own. But because these idiots in power just don't get it, these services are closing down. Towns are losing their firefighters. They're losing their emergency service. and now small police departments that have volunteers that go in there part-time to do patrol are going to be losing them.
So I was going to ask you about that. Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, Annie, about the volunteers in particular.
Absolutely. And they have botched up everything so badly. I mean, Chicago alone last weekend had 29 shootings. 29 over a weekend. We don't get that in New York City. But they've got such tight gun control and Rahm Emanuel in charge. You know, everything's just okay. Think about those cops
that
respond to all those.
That guy's a train wreck. I can't believe Rahm Emanuel. I can't believe that he's running Chicago. Like,
For real. Hey, listen, guys, that's what you paid for, that's what you got. Unbelievable.
Yeah. I really don't know how you guys walk around during the day sometimes, because with these this current caliber of politicians in the United States, it is like they're all vampires. And well, maybe that's the only way you can walk around in the streets during the day. You sure as hell can't during the night, because you're going to be bitten in the neck.
And it's amazing. And I'm glad you're dedicating the show to law enforcement officers, and especially these three Mounties that gave their lives so bravely trying to defend their community. And, you know, if there's anyone that's out there that is law enforcement and still on active duty, please do me a favor, do Kel a favor, do your community a favor, and don't go out there without your vest on. Please, guys,
and,
be safe. Put your vest on.
Yeah. These officers, the RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, they had their vest on. This guy pinged them off in the head.
Because this guy knew they were wearing vests.
Yeah.
And that's an unfortunate thing. You know, a lot of I can tell you stories about, you know, what I experienced, but this is not the time or place to say that. This is for these three men. And, you know, guys, if you see a cop out there running into a situation, don't be afraid to pick up the phone and dial 911 or whatever the emergency number is and say you see an officer in pursuit. He may or she may need backup. I can't tell you how many times people did that to me, because they would see me running down the street, and the next thing I know, I would hear a call over the radio, you know, female officer on such and such a street chasing such and such a subject. And it's like, all right, Central, it's me. I've got it under control. Slow everyone down so no one gets hurt. But still, if you see something happening and a cop out there, don't be afraid to pick up the phone to give them a helping hand, because you don't know what's going to happen. There could be someone around the corner, another patrol car, that can be there in a split second and keep them alive and keep them there to protect you another day.
And
I'm
that's what go for it, Annie. And I totally agree with that. And I think that we should be shaking a little more hands more often, you know? It's these people go out there, and they are so committed to what they do. And it's a tough gig. It's a tough gig for me to report it. And
it's very
it's
difficult.
Hard.
I mean, and I can't, I really, at this point, my mind is actually blurred to the number of funerals I went to while I was on active duty as a police officer in New York City. Because somewhere along the way in your heart, you just say, all right, fine, it's not going to be me. I don't ever want it to be me. And you look at your partner and say, I never want it to be that person. And you try to bury it. And a lot of these memories end up getting buried. You know, very similar to the way the World War II veterans came back and just buried their memories and got on with their life. We do the same thing. You know, once you walk out the door, once you hang up your uniform for the last time, you try to forget. But along the way, little things come and nag you. And those law enforcement officers are not out there only to enforce the law, but they're out there also as a social service. How many times did you walk into the middle of a couple of people arguing and you moderate and people walk away? You prevented a crime from happening right then and there by just doing a little social servicing. How many times you walk up and see a child that's left in a stroller on a sidewalk without a parent nearby or within a hand's reach, and you look around, you look, you find the parent, you chew them out, you put the stroller and the parent back together, and they never do that again. It's a social service. You know, people will walk up to you for advice out of the blue on some of the strangest things. It's a social service. It's not just law enforcement, but you're a community moderator in many ways. And it's really hard to explain why you go into it. But I was climbing the corporate ladder. I was working for American Express. I was an assistant manager for one of the travel offices just outside of Boston in a town called Reading. And I was climbing. I was going up. I had already owned my own business. I had managed a law firm. I walked away from it all because I felt there was more to life. And every single man and woman that puts that uniform on has a similar reason, because they feel there's something they need to give back to the community. And to have their lives so tragically struck down like this is, it's devastating. And we've lost the three men here in Canada, and we lost the two now in Las Vegas. Where's it stop, guys?
We have to start taking control of our destinies, and we have to start standing up in a huge way, ladies and gentlemen, and protecting those that stand in front of us. And Annie and I, we're always on the same page about that. Hey, Annie, do you want to hang out for a little bit longer? I am.
As long as my scotch hangs out. I had to get a laugh out of you.
I have a really nice song here, and I think I'm going to play it and give everybody a chance to. Annie, I lost the damn song.
You don't want me to sing.
Oh, where did it go? Oh, here it is. Hey, Annie's going to stay with me, and we'll see everybody back here in 3 minutes.
Thank you.
And hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Red Fox Blogger. I'm your host, Kel Fritzy, and joining me is Annie of Southern Sense, who you can hear on Tuesdays and Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. We were talking about the RCMP officers, and you know that was a tough deal for me to cover. And it's always very difficult to relate these stories, but you know they have to be done. We have to acknowledge the officers that were slain in Canada this week. And that is Constable David Ross, Constable Fabrice Georges Griffedian, and Constable Douglas James Larch. They were doing nothing more than conducting their duties, and this is their return. We have to remember, being a police officer, being a soldier, it's not just a job, people. It's a calling. You don't enlist in this line of work because you think it's going to be something, you know, stupendously well paid or anything. You might get some dental benefits, but it's not something you do just off the top of your head. It's a calling. It's like being a doctor or a priest. Something calls to you, and it is an issue of higher calling. Like, it's hard to explain. But we're going to move on to something. And, well, Annie, I want you to touch on that. What do you think about that?
Well, it's very, very hard to explain why you would go into, you know, the profession of law enforcement. And there's so many different branches. You know, you've got the DEA, you know, drug enforcement. You've got immigration enforcement. You've got, you know, regular street cops. You've got so many different. Everyone, they go for a different reason. But the bottom line is they go to protect and serve. And they feel that something out there that they are pulled into this, the same way a soldier would go. I wouldn't equate them, honestly, with a doctor or a priest, only in so much that sometimes we take the confessions. It's a willingness to say that I'm here for a different purpose. I'm here to give back. And I think that's honestly what every single law enforcement officer, no matter where they are, what branch of service they're in, would feel that they want to give back to the local community that they're serving in. I think that's the main difference. I mean, people can become doctors because they want to do facelifts and make millions of dollars. You know, that's not as altruistic as someone going into law enforcement. And people do not go into law enforcement because of the money. They don't go into it because it's a civil service job guaranteeing you a pension. They go into it knowing that one day when they put their uniform on and they step out there into the public or on patrol, they may not return. And I'm on my second husband. My first husband would cringe because he would get the phone call and say, and the desk office would say, "Don't worry, Mr. Hardy. You know, she's okay. She's over at the hospital, and she's being treated, and we'll drive her home for you." Because I would be injured in one way or another. And this is what the husbands and wives do. They sit there at home waiting for you to come back. And that's something I can't imagine because I was on the other end. But I can't imagine how many times, you know, they would know that I'm supposed to be home at a certain time, my tour ends at a certain time. I'm not home there. And then they start to worry. And then they get the phone call because the phone call will come in normally at 2 o'clock in the morning or something like that. And then they're thinking, oh, is this it? Is this it? Is this, did something finally bad really happened? Is this that moment I've been dreading the entire time? And I did that through two husbands, and God bless them both. God bless them both because they stood by me. And these men, their wives, got that final phone call, got that final knock on the door that said that their spouse is not coming home tonight. That father is not coming home. And it's, I can't answer on their end. I can only answer on my side. And how I wanted to make sure that when they made that phone call, they knew I was okay. And every single guy that puts on their uniform, every single gal has that in the back of their mind every single time. They strap on their shield. They strap on their vest. They strap on their gun belt. They test their radio. They make sure they have enough rounds, and they check their reserve. Those things go through their mind. Am I going to go home tonight?
And that's the thing, is that when the spouses kiss them and say, have a good day and be careful out there, that's almost that's a line from the Barney Miller sitcom, you know, when the sergeant would say, you know, here's the no, actually, it wasn't Barney Miller. It was, I believe it was
NYPD Blue. NYPD
That's
Blue,
it.
And it was,
you got her.
Put your vest on and be safe out there.
Yeah. And I say that to my spouse. We have breakfast, and he's walking out the door, and I say, be careful out there. And I've been doing that for, you know, like 25 years. And it's true, though. You never know what you never know what's going to face you during the day, and you never know if you're coming back after that day.
Yeah, and 9 times out of 10, it's the dumb things that get you. It's the one thing that you least expect that gets you. And I've seen this time after time, and it's the one moment you take your eye off that happens. And there's no way of knowing. There's no way. You try to be prepared as best as you can. You train as hard as you can. Now, I don't know how the Mounties do it, but twice a year we had to go and qualify. You had to go through all the training all over again to qualify with your firearm. You went through constantly, once a month, other training sessions. So you're constantly training, constantly out there to protect not just yourself and not just your fellow officers, but the public. And the focus was always on doing the best you can for the public. I mean, guys, we're not the enemies. We're your sisters. We're your wives. We're your brothers, your uncles, your kids.
Yeah.
We are part of your family. And it's not us versus them, as a lot of liberals will want you to think. We're a whole team. We're an actual team. And it's with your help we get our job done. And it's without your help, we fail in our job. And then we have to find another way to do it.
It's devastating here in Canada. And that we were a national day of mourning. And there are so many RCMP that we have been losing over the years. The violence that they confront is unbelievable, Annie. And
It's going to get worse.
It's going to get much worse. And this decade alone.
Yeah, you know, we've got this problem
terrible
right now. Yeah, and we've got this problem right now with all these illegals coming over the border, especially children. And some of them don't look like
what they're
all
doing. Yeah, what I understand what they're doing is that they're sending the children over, parentless.
Yeah, and some of these don't look like they're that young. Some of them look like they're, you know, 15, 16, 17, 18. And this is something I got a little heads up on, and something I caught in the news, oh, good Lord, probably maybe 10 or 15 years ago. that the Islamic terrorists have been now aligning themselves with the drug cartels. And this, there was actually
an
article, and I can't remember if it was Newsweek or Time, and I've scrubbed the web looking for this article. This was prior to 9/11. I believe it was back in 1997 or 98. There was an article, again, either Time or Newsweek, and they were saying OTM immigrants, other than Mexican immigrants, flooding into our borders through Arizona, California, Texas. And they were talking about the majority of them coming from Yemen, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iran, and they were naming all these Middle East countries that these OTMs were coming over the border. So they were telling us back in 97, 98, we already had a problem with being infiltrated by Islamic terrorists, and no one paid attention.
Well, what they're doing is that they're flying over overseas, and they're landing in Mexico. They're assimilating into the Mexican culture. They are
Spanish.
Assuming, learning Spanish, assuming the accent, because, you know, they're all, you know, swarthy skinned. And I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not going to try to make myself not to be critical of race, but I'm not a racist. You guys know that. But I am critical of race, and they're assimilating a particular race. And the Border Patrol officers, you know, they come and go, oh, we're Mexicans. But they're finding prayer mats and what have you.
Correct.
In the Arizona desert,
Prayer mats.
Like, it's craziness.
Now,
and
these kids are sending over. The kids they're sending over now, I'm hearing stories being told left and right, and this has been going on now for the last couple of years, that they're training these kids, these actually Hispanic children, these kids of Mexico, Guatemala, Nicaragua, Colombia, Argentina, wherever they're coming from, they're training them to be Islamic terrorists. So they're coming over, and they look like an innocent 13, 14-year-old, but they went through the same training the Islamic terrorist children are going through. So when they strap them on to a 6 or 7-year-old, you can be 100% Mexican or Guatemalan, and you're just as dangerous, unfortunately, as an Islamic terrorist out there. And they're slipping them over the border, and we're getting more and more infiltration. And now more and more, not just law enforcement is in danger, but the everyday American citizen.
Mm-hmm.
They're flooding our borders. They are doing everything that they can. It's
And some of the more ambitious ones are swimming up to Canada, and we're getting a little annoyed about that. But you know what? That's Canada's fault as well, because we're not fortifying our borders as well. So you know what? We cannot blame the United States for that. Canada has to take responsibility for fortifying the borders. But, the borders are so porous. It's amazing. And you never know what's swimming across. It's amazing, Annie.
No, it's absolutely amazing. And this is Kel, because you are, I believe, just a couple of years younger than me. But I was hearing stories about 35 years or more ago, you know, people complaining about certain enclaves within Canada. And they would say, this whole town is nothing but Pakis. I don't mean to use an ethnic word, but Pakistanis.
And when Pierre Elliott Trudeau introduced multiculturalism. I hear you, Annie.
And multiculturalism is full of crock. It's a huge crock.
Oh, it's terrible.
You're either a Canadian or you're not. You're either an American or you're not. You're either for the United States or you're not. This multiculturalism BS should go out the door. I am an unhyphenated American. I am American first.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I should say first American.
Oh, yeah. And that drives me crazy. I could never wrap my head around the hyphenated. It's like the who started with the African American? Did that start with Bill Clinton, the first black president, or what?
Oh no. That was long before that. That was came around with the Black Panthers and back in the 60s. Trust me, I grew up through all of that, and all of a sudden you have Black History Month, and I'm wondering, here we're teaching American history, and then
you got a whole month in February, girl. Come on, girl, shake it, girl, in February. Come on.
We were 100% for the civil rights movement, because being conservatives and Republicans, we were the ones that put that legislation before, back in 1864 and 5, and the Democrats turned around and overturned it in 1890, and we brought it back in the 1950s, and only because some idiot decided if we got Lyndon Johnson to pass it, we'll let him say he owns it.
Oh, yeah, that one, yeah.
And so then we lost the argument right then and there. But it had been our argument from the very start. And Thomas was talking about that earlier on my show today, and he's 100% right. But
yeah, Thomas,
to get
Thomas
that word
was
out.
Excellent on the show. It's like he's an absolute delight to listen to, and he has his own radio show within his own right. But when he called in, it was absolutely phenomenal. But, yeah, I know, like this hyphenated American, and we get it in Canada, and they're getting it in the UK. It's like, look, you cannot be hyphenated anything. You're either in or you're out. If you want to be an American, wonderful. We love you. If you want to be a Canadian, fantastic. Come on board. If you want to be English, wow, we love you, and of course. But the hyphenated, what they're doing is that they're putting one foot in and one foot out, and they're not totally committed to the betterment of the host country in which they have emigrated to, Annie. And this is what pisses me off. I see a lot of issues about these ethnic groups and the enclaves. And, yeah, Canada has enclaves like you wouldn't believe. And I'm going to bring this story up probably on Monday with my co-host Tim Burton. And this is the Muslims are screaming again about not having accommodation. And this time they're screaming about parking spaces so that their 400 cars can fit into a parking lot. And it's like, oh, well, we can't fit all, no, we not all of us can fit our cars into a you know, the parking lot, like I said, like it's like 400 cars are already there, you know, we show up and we're late and we have to park on the street and we get ticketed. This is a human rights violation.
I used to get that with the scenic officer, don't give me a ticket, give me a
Annie,
scare.
Oh, Annie, I'll send
you. Boom, here's your scare,
I'll
and now here's
you
your
the
ticket.
Link. Yeah, getting a parking ticket is a human rights violation.
Oh.
Like, these people are batshit crazy.
You can't make up people.
You cannot make this shit up. It is in the National Post. Ladies and gentlemen, Google National Post Muslims parking Mississauga. It's right there. Like Annie, I swear, I don't know what to do some days.
And, you know, honestly, I actually thought that, you know, I found the most ridiculous law on the books when there's a town, there's a road on Long Island, New York, called Cowpath. And the law for that road is that someone has to walk in front of the car carrying a lantern so that no cows get hit by the car. And that law is still on the books.
What? Oh,
so you're kidding. I said, well, CalPATH is nothing compared to this BS.
So no CalTipping? No CalTipping allowed?
You go out to Southampton on Long Island, where all the rich people and the actors and everything else go, and the artsy-fartsy people go. You're not allowed to walk down the street and eat an ice cream cone. But you know,
for God's sake,
parking is a human rights violation. That takes the cake. That really does take the cake.
Sanity. You know, there's a saying for that. It's called, I'm going to walk down the street, eat my ice cream cone, and bite me. Something like
that.
I don't know. I'll have to ask either Jeff, Tommy, or Tim about that. But there actually is a saying about eating ice cream cones down the street and being defiant. I'll have to ask one of those three about that. But that's nuts.
No, I was just wondering, what about public flatulence?
Oh, you know what? If you fart in Pakistan, you'll be taken to jail. Yes, you will. You will be arrested. Yes. And they have fart police.
Is it based upon the
they do?
Factor?
Solid farts are okay, but loud farts will get you thrown into the clinker.
What if you attach a kazoo at the time you fart?
No, it's true though, Annie. They have fart police. They're called the modesty police, and you know that if a woman. Oh, Annie, they know when a woman farts because her burqa blows out.
Is that a parachute of my wife?
And they'll come up and they'll bundle her into the van and they'll take her to the jail. And she'll be having this stand before the judge, and the judge will say, "What is the charge?" And the magistrate will say, "Well, she farted in public."
Flagrant flatulence.
Yeah.
In the first degree.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I'm dying.
Oh, Cal Living wants to know from the chat room, Cal. And Annie, how can they prove who did the fart in a crowd? Oh, well, Cal, we just explained that. The billowing burqa. Billowing burqa. Oh, my God, I got to write that down. The billowing burqa.
Have you ever been in a public place and you did an SBD, silent but deadly one, and then you turn around and point to the person standing next to you and go, "Oh, at least say I'm sorry and excuse me."
Oh, I've done that all the time. Oh, it's hilarious. You're standing there, and sometimes shit happens.
Here's evidence, Your Honor. Brown shorts.
Yeah. Oh, just have something extra in your fanny pack.
Make sure you get rid of the Depends before you go to court.
Remove the evidence.
Oh, this is going downhill real fast.
I think this is what I needed. The show started out so damned heavy, but you are my relief. I love you, Annie. Oh my God, I needed you so much tonight.
Agrador has the old saying, he who smelt it, dwelt it.
Agrador, you're a bad, bad man.
And Dodgy Dave has a really good one. Here in the UK, Muslims ignore parking restrictions and traffic wardens just to turn a blind eye. Don't know anything about a farting jihad.
Farting jihad. We're going to have to work on that one, Annie. I really like that one, though. The billowing burqa. Oh, shit. We are in such trouble.
Weapons of mass destruction.
Oh, my God.
I'm crying.
Okay.
I'm laughing so hard I'm crying.
I know. So am I. I'm in tears over here. Like, it's like, I'm so sorry that the Fart Police took you away in Pakistan for, you know. But, you know, maybe you shouldn't be wearing the burqas and that when you fart that you billow out.
Well, no, if they were smart, they'd have a vent cut in the back. You know, a little slit. Like a split skirt, you know, just as you do it, just quickly open
like
and close
a pencil
it.
Skirt. Oh, you know what? What they should do
is think about that.
You know what? There's a market in this, I think. Now, this could be quite the design, but the only thing
it's
I would be worried
burqa.
About. The only thing that would happen is that if an upwind came about and they exposed an ankle, they would have to really explain themselves.
Oh, no, that's easy to take care of. You know what you do? You get those little things that go around your knees and go down to your ankle. So if the skirt does blow up, there's still a second skirt underneath around your knees. So the ankles are never exposed.
Like support hose.
Exactly, knee highs.
Okay, this is, ladies and gentlemen, Annie and I are, and I'm doing the, you know, and my hand, my palm is upturned, and I'm introducing Annie, and we are introducing to you a new clothing line, and it is called the Pencil Skirt Burqa with support hose, and we're going to make millions, I tell you. And here comes Annie walking down the catwalk.
Meow.
Meow. Oh, I love it very much. I think, Annie, you and I, we're going to make a lot of money if we stick together, girl.
The fartless burqa.
The fartless burqa. Okay. You know what? Okay.
And folks, this is radio at its greatest.
No, I am not going to do that. This is like gold, people. I tell you, gold. This is going on The Price is Right and Family Feud and all sorts of other game shows as questions. What is, okay, answer is, what do you call a burqa that does not billow when the woman farts? And Annie and I, we submitted that question, and Annie and I are going to make millions because of it. Agador is saying vented for her pleasure.
Well, it makes it a lot easier when you have to go to the bathroom. Now you don't have to lift up everything, you just park the vent.
Oh, God, it's like men's underwear.
Instead of being in the front, it's in the back.
Yeah. Hey, Islamist ladies, we're just trying to help you.
Well,
we have
makes
a new.
Lot easier.
Yeah,
it makes it a lot easier when you want to tell someone to kiss my butt. You can actually open the vent and shove it in their face and say, "Kiss."
That is that would be one hairy butt they'd be kissing. But no, no, no. Annie and I, we're getting serious now. Okay, ladies and gentlemen,
right.
we're going to get serious. Yeah, like that's going to happen with me and Annie. Okay.
Oh, you give me a headache. I'm laughing so much.
Ice cream, girl. Ice cream. Walk
no,
down
the
street
ice
with
the
your ice cream cone. Oh, no. Yeah, you know what, Annie? I think that you and I would make a damned fortune at a clothing design. What do you think, people? What do you think? Come on. Oh my God, this is going to be so much gold. And Annie and I will be seeing you on the Isle of Wight in our Malibu houses. Okay, we'll see you on the Isle of Wight in our houses and on Malibu in our houses. And we'll be seeing you in Hawaii in our houses because we are going to strike it rich.
Well, you can keep the Isle of Wight because it gets cold over there. You can keep California because
they
it's
have
liberal
those cliffs
over there.
Yeah. I'm not fond of the cliffs that they have over there because, you know, I have vertigo.
Oh, geez, don't even go in there with me.
Oh, I know. Yeah, you do too. I even hate stairs.
That I have a problem with them, and the reason why is that I had taken a couple of injuries to my head, and there's damage to the eye nerves. So that when I look downward, my eyes bounce and nothing stays steady. So I have to hold on to railings.
Oh, yeah.
And I found out about that. Unfortunately, I was chasing someone down from the 23rd floor of a housing project, and I got down about 7 flights, and I started to fall. And that's when they said, you've got a problem with your eyes. So
you have vertigo. Like, I have vertigo. And it is deadly for me, and I'm very much frightened of going
falling
up and down the stairs. If I don't have something to cling onto, it is it's really hard on me. And I've had a few unfortunate accidents with stairs. One included carrying up a load of laundry, and my cat got underfoot. And I didn't, and so it was either step on my cat or lose a load of laundry. So I lost the load of laundry, but I collapsed. And I cracked two ribs. Yep, so that was a lovely 2 months out of my life.
Ooh, I did better than that. I actually broke my tailbone. I had called in because my shoulder had at that point had been dislocated, so I had called in, sick to the police department. And about 2 o'clock in the morning, they decided to call my house to tell me to show up at the medical services that morning at 7 a.m. So I'm going down the stairs to go get showered, and it's now 3 o'clock in the morning, and my cat Sylvester, and Sylvester and Tweety Bird, I had the Sylvester. Down to the pink nose, the white belly, and the stupid antics. I had that cat, the cartoon was made after that cat. Well, I fell over him. And consequently, actually it had been right after my shoulder surgery, so I was still in a sling. So I couldn't grab onto the railing to stop my fall. And I went down 13 steps on my tailbone. I broke my tailbone. For the next 3 months, I was sitting between two chairs. Oh man, was that nasty! Oh,
isn't that just lovely when you have to sit in a hospital bed for like 3 months? Me, I only went 2 months, but it's true, ladies and gentlemen. What us ladies do, for you.
to get about the girls.
We do laundry, we wash the kitchen floor, and we do radio shows to bring you the news, and we trip over cats and break ribs and tailbones. Oh, come on, you guys. You got to appreciate us. But, oh, Annie, I really want to thank you, though, for calling in, because this has been such a wonderful show with you joining me. And the levity that you brought to it, I really, really needed that. It has been a very, very somber show tonight. And but Annie makes my life so much easier, and I want to thank you, Annie. I'm going to do something right now, and I'm trying to find the darned thing, and my apologies, ladies and gentlemen. Annie, talk for a sec.
Okay.
Tell people where they can find you.
Well, people can find me up on Southern Sense at Blog Talk Radio. They can also look at southern-sense.com, and I'm also up on Tea Party Community. If you're up on Facebook and you're really ticked off with Facebook, the way they treat conservatives or Republicans or anyone with a message like ours, get rid of Facebook. Go on over to teapartycommunity.com. It works like Facebook, but you've got like-minded people on there. And if you do go over there, tell Tim Selty I sent you over there. I am still up on Facebook as Southern Sense. I'm up on Twitter, Southern_Sense. And where the heck am I? Oh, yes, Kinetic Hi-Fi out of Charleston, South Carolina, Patriot Radio Network. And, Cal, we've got a new announcement hopefully coming up in the next week or two. I'm trying to get all the details into gear. And we're going to be carried on a nationwide station, and they're going to give us a higher broadcasting power than Blog Talk Radio does. We'll still go through Blog Talk Radio, but we'll also have a separate broadcast platform that gives us more power and better wavelength. So I won't get the cutoff. I won't get all the other garbage that we get on Blog Talk Radio. So we got a lot of stuff up in the future coming up.
Oh, yeah.
So you find yourself?
And, yeah. And ladies and gentlemen, days and Fridays, 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And make sure you're there for that. Annie, you are just so fantastic. I can't say enough about you. You're an inspiration because you're the one that keeps me going. I was ready to give it up, and you said, no, you keep going because we need you. And that's why I do what I do. And everybody knows that I'm a counter-jihadist, self-proclaimed, and I have been talking about issues that were rather heavy. But Annie, I love you.
Girlfriend, if you and I ever sat down together for cocktails, we would close the bar out.
Are you kidding? I can see it now, Annie. It would be 8:30 in the morning. Annie.
Happy hour's over? The last call?
It's like, are you kidding? When was what? Last call was when?
Well,
oh, I think they kicked us out about. Yeah, I think they kicked us out about 7 hours ago. Annie, it's like, is this why we're in the ditch? Oh, hey, what's that? Kel, what is that? Annie, I think it's called sunshine.
Oh, is that why it's hurting my eyes?
Yeah. Hey, where's my sunglasses? Oh, yeah. And ladies and gentlemen, you can expect a lot more of this down the road. And we're
one.
Oh my God!
One joke over the line, Jesus.
I would stumble 500 miles. Oh, we are, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, we are respected radio hosts heard right here on Blog Talk Radio. Annie introduces the best and brightest in American politics, and I interview the best and brightest in the counter-jihad movement. And, yeah, and we're stumbling down the road getting kicked out of bars.
Oh, man, you're a bad influence on me. Or is it the other way around?
I'm a bad, bad girl. I think it goes both ways.
You know, I feel like Earth
okay.
at that moment. So did I do that?
Oopsie. That's exactly it. And you're... Oh, God. Oh, ladies and gentlemen. Tim,
are there any left?
Bert has, and Jeff Mitchell have formally fired me. But, yeah, we're going to close out this show, though. Annie, I want to thank you so very much for joining me tonight, because you did. You were the best in that you offered up such a great moment of levity, and we needed that because the topic material, it was very, very tough on all of us. And hey, Annie, can I show up on Tuesday, and can we do the same thing again?
Absolutely, and you'll love Mike Cutler, because Mike Cutler, like I said, is a friend of mine. And, you know, Kel, not to bring the show back down again, but there's something I keep on my desk, and I've had since the very first day I joined the police department. It's a spent bullet, and it looks like a little tiny mushroom. And I leave it on the computer directly in front of me, because I'm on the computer every single day, just to remind me. And... ladies and gentlemen, when you go out there and you see a law enforcement officer, walk up to them and say thank you. If you see a soldier, you see a Marine, you see a sailor, walk up to them
Amen.
And say thank you. Just say thank you.
That's
and that's
right.
all I need to say.
Annie, I want to thank you so very much. And we are going to see you on Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, my time zone. Annie, you are the best. And I'm going to close out the show now. And I'm going to do something which I'm really not, it was a hard show. But Annie came on and she offered some levity. And I needed that because... everybody knows that what I do is a very difficult, my format is very difficult, but I want to read out some names to you. We talked about the fallen in the RCMP, and there's some names I want to share with you. And this includes quite a few people. For example, in November 25th of 2007, Constable Douglas Scott in Nunavik was shot and killed after responding to a report of a drunk driver on Baffin Island. A suspect was arrested 4 hours after the shooting. Scott was with the force for 1 year. On October 6th of 2007, Constable Christopher John Warden was shot and killed after responding to a complaint at a home in Hay River, Northwest Territories. A suspect was arrested. On July 7th of 2006, Constable Mark Bergadish and Constable Robin Cameron were shot and killed after responding to an assault call in the Spiritwood, Saskatchewan. Both of the officers died 8 days after the shooting, within 2 hours of each other. On March 3rd of 2005, in one of the deadliest days in RCMP history, 4 officers were shot in Marisport, Alberta, after they attempted to a rural property to investigate a small marijuana grow operation and reports of auto parts theft. Constable Anthony Fitzgerald Orion, Gordon Constable Leonine, Constable Nicholas Johnson, Constable Ross Warren, and Peter Christopher Scheiman, Constable, all died as a result of gunshots. The suspect was also found dead on the property. February 28, 2004, 35-year-old veteran Corporal Jim Galloway was shot after gunfire erupted at the scene of standoff in Spruce Grove, Alberta. The suspect was also killed in the shootout. December 21, 2001, Constable Dennis Stronkwell was killed in the Weiwei Kipo First Nation near Russell, Manitoba, after he was shot in his police car while investigating an armed robbery. His vehicle was then rammed by the suspect in front of the local detachment. Stronkwell was unable to return fire due to a pistol malfunction and died inside the vehicle. March 5, 2001, Constable Jurgen Seawald was killed after responding to a domestic dispute in Nunavik. During an altercation with the suspect, Jurgen was shot. The suspect was sentenced to life imprisonment, no parole, 25 years. June 14, 1996, Sergeant Derek Burkholder was shot for responding to a domestic dispute in Nova Scotia. The suspect was subsequently shot dead by other officers at the scene. The RCMP keeps a running list online of all officers killed by gunfire and other cops in the line of duty dating back to 1865. In that time, 87 officers have been killed by gunfire, not including the 3 killed Wednesday in New Brunswick, which includes Constable David Ross, Constable Fabrice Georges-Gervais, and Constable Douglas James Clark. And we honor their memories today, and we thank you all for partaking in this program. And Annie and myself are grateful that you offered us an opportunity to have some levity, because these are tough jokes too. Annie does very tough jokes. I do very tough jokes. And we appreciate everything you do to partake with us. So, Southern 10, Tuesdays and Fridays at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Red Fox Blogger, Mondays at 3 p.m. and Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. We are out there. We are striving. We are trying so very hard to get the word out to you that there is an issue going on. Annie talks about the issues in the United States that pertaining to the political United States, Obama's politics. I speak with you from Canada, and I speak with you about the issues of Islam. And Annie and I, though, we are not oil and water. We are like white on rice with each other. Right, Annie?
Oh, yeah, I had turned myself down. I had muted it so you could do your dedication, which was very, very lovely, very nice. But, yeah, we're white on rice. I'm more like red beans and rice over here down in the south. As you can tell, I have a southern accent here. But, go ahead.
Oh,
Kat,
yeah.
Go ahead.
No, but I was going to say that you put it together so well. Like, how does a northern girl become a southern sensible woman?
I've always been a sensible woman. I've always been a conservative. It's just the fact that New York State became so damn liberal that between the taxes, the cold weather, and my arthritis, it was time to go a little more south where it was warmer,
right,
more economically feasible, and politically. So I found a red state. And actually, there's a true story. My husband and I, we came driving down the coast of the eastern seaboard. We went and we stopped in North Carolina, parts of South Carolina. We were going to head into Georgia. But we hit here in Beaufort, South Carolina, and I saw a sign up on the side of the building, and it was sort of like a Sherlock Holmes with the pipe and everything else, and it said Hemingway's. And I'm thinking, a bookshop. I'm an avid reader. I am an extremely avid reader. If anyone saw my collection of books, they'd go, what? I said, all right, let me check it out. So we go down this little alley and all the way around to the back of this building and down some steps. And guess what? It wasn't a bookstore. It was a bar.
Oh.
My husband and I walked in there, and we were greeted with the owners that had just bought it. They had been owning it for just less than a year, and they're Australian. And they buy us the first round. Having never been there before, they didn't know us from Adam. And I went, honey, I'm home. So that is how we decided to move to Beaufort, South Carolina. Now, remember earlier I was talking about the individual that had the sex change? And that was the husband that owns the bar.
No. Are you serious?
You're serious. So his boat is sitting in the little man in the boat's backwards. And they still are very, very good, dear friends of ours.
You know, it's really...
you don't want to go there, do you?
It's kind of like, what? But you know what? This is the life of humanity, ladies and gentlemen. And Annie and I have been so happy to share it with you tonight. I really want to thank you, though, for paying homage to Canadian Day of Mourning. But I also want to thank you for knowing that I really needed my friend Annie to offer me my levity, because it's such a tough topic. And Annie, I love you, baby. And we're going to do this again, but it won't be maybe in such a heavy sense. It's just going to be, you know, me and Annie. I can't go on her show because I disrupt her so bad. But when Annie comes on mine, she offers so much more. Like, Annie contributes. I disrupt. That's the difference between the two of us. But you know what? We both work so well together. And
well, you did a great job,
girl.
With my guest today. I mean,
he was really, really nice. Yes. And I loved him.
I thought he'd let loose more, though. I was expecting him to let loose a little bit more. Because if you ever read his tweets or his posts, and he goes to the jugular. And I really wanted to try to get that, and I was kept on trying to pull a little bit out, and he just wasn't going to give it just yet. Maybe next time.
I think he might have been a little reticent, is what I'm thinking. And, you know, no worries. We're going to get him back, and we are going to pull a little more teeth, because I thought what he was saying was fantastic, and that we need more people like this. We need to have more people exposing what's going on out there, and he's
He's like a breath of fresh air.
You get the greatest guest.
It's not easy. It's a lot of work, trust me. But, you know, what I'm finding is that more and more of these Hollywood people that are sitting in the back shadows, and a lot of the sports people are coming forward,
yeah,
and they're no longer afraid to say, thank you, God. Thank you to my faith in God. Thank you to the United States, and I believe in the founding fathers and their principles. People are starting to say, hey, listen, we've got that conservative voice out there, and it's not embarrassing. It's the truth. Are seeing that the liberal message is not the only message, and I'm cheered about that. I'm disappointed in Lindsey Graham, but...
Yeah. I think Nick Searcy coming back would be a real asset, though, and speaking with him.
You weren't listening when I had Chuck Woolery on. Chuck Woolery, do you remember the game show host?
Chuck Woolery? Yeah.
He is an avid conservative and an avid gun activist. He was a blast. He was like an older version of Chuck Searcy, not afraid to say what he thought. So, yeah, we've had some great guests on. So I'll see what's up in my sleeve.
Yeah, but I think having Nick Searcy back on would be absolutely phenomenal. Like, that would be just fantastic because he's such an engaging man. But you're right that we have to pull a little more teeth with him because we almost have him there.
I wanted him to go on a rant, and I just kept on trying to set him up for the rant.
I know.
I just could not get him on the rant. I just wanted him just to let loose. And, you know, you only have 5 minutes left, Kel, and your show has just flown tonight.
Yes, I am out of time. And I haven't said the F-bomb yet, ladies and gentlemen, all evening, so nobody could take a drop of their scotch. And so you're going to show up at Reactionary Speaks Network sober. My apologies.
Hell, you say.
Oh, but Annie,
when you went
what a pleasure.
Song, I refilled.
But I love you guys. And Annie, thank you so much for being with me tonight because it was really hard getting through this show. And like I say, you offered up some moments that I needed and the listeners needed. And we're going to see you on Tuesday at 2 p.m. over there at your program. And we're going to see everybody back here on Monday with Tim Burton and myself at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. We are the Red Fox Blogger. And Annie, of course, is Southern Sense. Annie, have a wonderful night. And on this note, what I'm going to do, I'm not going to play out with my usual Fox on the Run song. I'm going to play out with something to honor the memories of all these RCMP officers that have died for you in the line of duty. And Annie, I will be speaking with you soon.
Good night and God bless.
God bless, Annie.